Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to visit with the Minnesota National Guard and meet a new Yellow Ribbon Company here in Minnesota. And at this point in the show, we usually have a message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, but we're going to do one better today. We've got him on the line with us himself, Major General John Jensen. Sir, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Tom, it's good to be with you, although, I'm calling in today, and I'm used to being in the studio with you, so I just let you know that I miss that, and, hopefully I can get back in there sometime soon and talk to you face-to-face.
Well, General, as all our listeners know, there's a pandemic taking across the world, and it's affecting the United States of America, and there's certain areas such as New York, Washington, California that are hit much harder than we are, but we've got guidelines from the president and guidelines from the governor that say that we have to maintain some distance and we have to be careful and make sure that we're healthy. And so I think we're doing the right thing today. Everybody at their own station and being safe and following those guidelines, sir.
Yeah, it's amazing what we can do distributively and that we physically don't need to be close to each other. But, as humans, we do crave that physical contact, that close physical proximity. So we'll do this for as long as we need to do this. But when the time comes where we can get back together, I know we all look forward to that.
As do I, sir. Now, General, we've talked in the past about the federal and state missions of the Minnesota National Guard, and most of the time we're talking about the federal missions where your troops are called up and they're serving overseas and they're working hard and they're doing a great job, and you've got plenty of troops that are overseas now. But in light of this coronavirus, there's issues where the Guard units, not only in Minnesota but across the nation, are being called up to state duty to assist in helping to fight the COVID-19 outbreak.
Yeah, exactly right, Tom. You know, from the state of Washington to New York and across the country, the National Guard is out there doing their mission, federal mission and their state mission. I think at the time, that we're recording this, we're just shy of 10,000 National Guardsmen deployed in their states across the country, supporting their governors, supporting their communities, doing their constitutional mission of, protecting Americans, protecting American lives and ease suffering. So it's amazing how quickly the guards responded across the country, places like New York. We're watching that very closely. There's a lot of indicators that we can pick up as it relates to COVID-19, as it relates to National Guard response, by watching what's going on in New York, what's going on in California, what's going on in Washington, and of course, here in Minnesota, with our governor being a former guardsman, he understands, the National Guard, our capabilities, and employing the National Guard when local capacity is exceeded, and so that's what we're doing. I can tell you, we're really, really involved, although. If you look at our state active duty numbers, you might say, hey, why isn't the Guard more involved? I can tell you that, twice a day I'm on the phone with the governor and the governor's staff. Three times a week, we're in a VTC with the Chief of National Guard Bureau. Five times a week, we're doing our own operational update across the entire Minnesota National Guard. And, nightly I'm sending updates to senior leaders and senior staff. All preparing for the inevitable call to the National Guard in support of COVID-19. And so, as you look at operational framework, as you look at how the military frames operations, where are we, where have we been, right from my perspective, we've really kind of left the stage of where it was preparation and planning, and now we're shaping the environment. The governor's been very adamant about this amongst his staff, and that's, ensuring that we understand what could happen in the state as it relates to COVID-19, and then planning off, that most dangerous course of action as it relates to, what's our hospital capacity, what's our staffing capacity, those type of things. So we are we are certainly in the shaping piece of this. So when we move into the decisive operation, and I'll define the decisive operation of being once the rate of COVID-19 exceeds what our current capacity is, you know, we're going to be prepared. We're going to have that excess capacity created. We're going to be in the right place at the right time. And of course, during that entire time, we are sustaining the operation. Some of your listeners might have seen the Minnesota National Guard over the last couple weeks has done a couple missions where we've moved personal protective equipment, or PPE, out of stockage up in Camp Ripley down here to the Department of Health, to their warehouse, so that can be further distributed to medical care professionals, to public safety professionals. And it's all under this idea that, you know, in this crisis, because it is a medical crisis, the Department of Health is the main effort. And all other agencies are supporting the Department of Health here, and certainly the governor as well. But we're supporting effort right now, primarily contributing to other agencies' efforts. I can tell you we've been engaged with everybody from the Department of Education, the Department of Corrections, obviously Public Safety and HSCM, Department of Health, and on and on and on, to help them get ready for this. And so, like I said, while it may not look like a large effort right now as it relates to state active duty, I can tell you we got about 100 full-time employees that on day-to-day, this is what they're doing around the clock. 100% of their time is committed to preparing us and contributing to the state as we get ready to respond to COVID-19. You know, obviously, the health and safety of our soldiers and our airmen is certainly our first priority. You know, if you will, we're going to preserve our force. So when the governor does call us and ask us for us to come out in a larger presence and a larger strength, that we're prepared to do that.
We're speaking with Major General John Jensen, Minnesota's Adjutant General, on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, I saw a news report the other day when the president was announcing that the National Guards from New York, California, and Washington were brought up in a special status, and he went out of his way to make sure that everyone knew that he was waiving a portion of the cost of that the federal government was picking that up, but they were being called up and reporting to the governors in New York, California, and Washington. Can you explain that status a little bit?
Yeah, that's I appreciate you bringing that up, Tom, because it can get a little bit confusing to some people. And so primarily, traditionally, when we respond to ice storms, snowstorms, and floods here in Minnesota and across the country, our guardsmen come in a state active duty status. State active duty means that I'm being activated by my governor. I'm going to work under the command of my governor, and the state of Minnesota is going to pay for that. There are other statuses that the Guard can respond in, and specifically in this case, well, we have worked very closely with our federal CODEL, and the governor has worked very closely with the Council of Governors, the Secretary of Defense, and the President. Is a status where we come in, we're activated by our governor, we continue to work under the command of our governor, but we're federally funded from the first moment. It's called Title 32-502F. Some people have taken this to believe that we are federalizing the National Guard, and we're not. What we want to do is mobilize our National Guard, again, under the authority of our governor, under the governor's command, but that we're immediately federally funded and we don't have to ask our states to initially carry the bill. That's very, very important, because what we want to do is the money that is available at the state level is to use that in areas that only state money can be used. and take federal money as it's available and apply it to where federal money can help. So that's that special state, or that's a special federal status that the president talked about specifically for the three hardest hit areas: New York, Washington, and California. Now, what we're trying to do, again, working with the president's office and the SecDef's office, is to get pre-authority for that special status. So as we bring on larger number of guardsmen, we can immediately put them in a 502F Title 32 status and draw on that federal funding, and then again use our state funding in areas that only the state can spend money in, whether that's state unemployment insurance or people who become homeless as a result of this activity. You know, use that state money there, but use federal money for our National Guard. And again, it does not mean that we are federalized. And certainly, I know some people have taken the opportunity to express their concern as it relates to martial law and the use of the military inside the state to support martial law. And I can tell you, we had a meeting with the Secretary of Defense earlier this week. We've met multiple times with the Chief of National Guard Bureau, and of course, daily with the governor. There is absolutely no talk of martial law and using the National Guard to enforce some type of lockdown or confinement of U.S. citizens.
Very good, sir. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to speak more with Major General John Jensen, Minnesota's Adjutant General, on Minnesota Military Radio. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been visiting with Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen, on Minnesota Military Radio. And General, in the last segment, we were carefully talking about the status that the governors of New York, California, and Washington called up their guard. And to oversimplify it, which I like to do sometimes, it looks like they were called up on state duty, they're reporting to the governors, and the federal government volunteered to pay for that duty. But in no way are they reporting to the president. They're reporting to the governors, and the governors are using them to help with the crisis that we now refer to as COVID-19.
Yeah, that's correct. We call it Title 32. Title 32 is state control, federally funded.
Sir, under these conditions, the pandemic, and I know it affects something that you like to do all the time, and that's training, and have your readiness status as high as possible. But I would guess that that's affected how you do your weekend drills and how you go about business in order to keep your troops safe.
Yeah, exactly, Tom. What we did over a week ago is we implemented what we call a distributive training weekend. And so as our units approach their traditional training weekend, which we would call IDT, we're allowing soldiers to train distributively. And we're doing it really primarily for two reasons. Number one is where I can, how I can, I want to continue to pay my soldiers. I think that's very important. Many of them could be affected economically by the COVID-19 crisis that we're in. So if I can confirm that my soldiers or my airmen are training, even if it's training online, I want to provide them a paycheck. Second of all, it ensures that we remain connected with our soldiers and airmen. What I did not want to do is just start postponing our drill weekends, because then we begin losing contact with our soldiers and airmen. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, at some point, I believe the Minnesota National Guard is going to have to respond to COVID-19 in bigger numbers than where we're currently supporting the event as we move to peak COVID-19 time. And so those are two reasons why we moved to this distributive training. But we also have, you know, we do have some soldiers that are reporting to training. For example, if the Guard is called out and we have to respond, we know we're going to have to utilize the vehicles that we have. So our maintainers very well are attending their training periods. And we're just making sure that we're following all the guidance as it relates to social distancing and those type of things. So our mechanics, for example, can come in and work on our helicopters. They can work on our airplanes. They can work on our vehicles. So when we get the call, we know that our equipment is ready to go. And then we have another category of soldiers that we know are going to deploy, and we need to continue to plan on that deployment until the Secretary of Defense changes that plan, if the Secretary of Defense changes the plan. But if he doesn't, we need to make sure that that unit is as available and ready as possible. Now, we do know that by changing how we're training, and we do know that by limiting some of our training, it's going to have an impact on that readiness. But my goal and my job is to retain as much readiness as we can inside of the conditions that we're operating in, with the obstacles and the constraints and the limitations. So that's our goal. Our goal is to continue to pay our soldiers where we can, how we can, and to keep them connected to the units. And then thirdly, making sure that we maintain readiness where we can.
General, I remember a few years ago, I think the division was planning a deployment to Africa to deal with the Ebola crisis. And I asked at the time, why us? And the answer was, who's better able? Who's better trained? Who's better able to get on the ground and take care of that? And it kind of comes down to the fact that when disaster strikes, your troops pack a lunch and get to work.
Yeah, we bring a great variety of civilian acquired skills. One of the first soldiers that we reached out to is an officer that's got great civilian experience in a supply chain business. And so he understands inventories, he understands distribution, he understands transportation. And we made this person available to the Department of Health to help them, again, to increase their capacity and their capability. And it just, you know, that's just one example of where our soldiers, our airmen, bring their civilian acquired skill along with their military discipline and their military training, and really, as a result, are able to bring two skill sets into every problem. And so we're doing that across the force, you know, looking at, you know, for example, let's just talk about our medical care professionals. You know, some people believe that, you know, maybe we should mobilize our civilian or our National Guardsmen who are also medical professionals. We're truly trying to avoid that, because those doctors, those nurses, those physicians, assistants, they're already contributing to medicine here in Minnesota. They already have a role in COVID-19 and patient care. And so we want to leave them there and let them continue to contribute inside of their community, instead of bringing them out into the military to then turn around and work for the community. So in some cases, we're really trying to protect our soldiers and airmen and leave them where they're at. In some cases, we're able to bring them off of their civilian acquired skill and their current employment, and have them contribute in a different way.
We're speaking with Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen, on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, I know that we've got some activities coming up, such as the National Training Center this summer and some other deployments coming up. Is this COVID crisis going to have an impact on those scheduled deployments?
Well, as of right now, the answer would be no. We have not seen any adjustment as it relates to our deployment schedule for the short term, nor have we seen any change to our National Training Center deployment that's coming up. But we continue to monitor that. We continue to make plans around that. For example, units that are scheduled to deploy this summer, I'm really trying to protect them from doing any type of COVID-19 mission, because what I don't want to do is, for example, take a unit, put them on state active duty for a month or 2 months in support of COVID-19, bring them back off duty, dust them off, and then deploy them a week later. I don't think that's fair to their family. It's not fair to their employer. Now, if the environment forces us to do that, we would certainly do that. But I'm really trying to protect those soldiers and airmen that have deployments coming up, so they can do everything that they need to do to prepare their family, prepare their employer, and prepare themselves for that. But if that changes, if the Secretary of Defense changes that schedule, if the Secretary of the Army changes our NTC rotation, we'll take that into account and just move forward. But right now we're still planning off the previous schedule.
Sir, we've just got about 30 seconds left. How are our soldiers and airmen that are currently deployed? Are you keeping them up to date on the coronavirus?
We are, and we're in contact with them. We do know this, though. The one limitation that we're going to have is when they do return. Right now, is they'll spend 14 days in quarantine at their demobilization site as they perform their demobilization task. So we do know that they're going to be a little bit delayed when they get back to the United States. But that's just to ensure their health and ensure the health of everyone here in Minnesota. And so I think it's a small price to pay just to make sure that we remain safe, we remain diligent. And we've told our soldiers and airmen that, so they can put that in their planning and their calculations as well.
Busy time, sir. Please take care of yourself and your troops. And we're very happy that you're out there helping with all the agencies that are reacting to this crisis here in Minnesota.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I appreciate that. And I just ask all of our listeners, to listen to what Governor Walz has put out to us. We can individually make a difference. We can flatten the curve. We can build more time for our medical health professionals to build additional capacity. So when we do reach the peak season for COVID-19, we're better prepared. So I just ask all Minnesotans to do that, to heed the governor's call here, because, your individual actions do have an impact. Thanks, Tom. Great talking to you.
Thanks for joining us today, sir.
You're welcome.
That was Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen, on Minnesota Military Radio. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to learn all about another Yellow Ribbon company, Boston Scientific. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Well, here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
As I reflect on the sacrifices our Vietnam veterans have made for our country, I am reminded that it's never too late to pay tribute and honor to those who have answered our nation's call. We give thanks to a generation of Americans who saw our country through one of the most challenging missions ever faced. Minnesota servicemen and women put their lives on hold or called upon to assemble at our nation's request to serve during the Vietnam War. These individuals served bravely with honor and distinction and heroically laid down their lives to preserve the freedoms that we Americans hold dear. To all of our Vietnam veterans listening, thank you for your service and welcome home.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the Director of Military Outreach for the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, Ms. Annette Kuiper. Annette, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be here.
Annette, it's been a while since you've been on the air with us, and I know you've been out there working hard. How many Yellow Ribbon companies are we up to now?
Today, we have 71 Yellow Ribbon companies that are doing great things across the state.
71 and counting. You're out there burning up cars again, still building that network and doing a great job. And who did you bring with us today?
Well, today we have a wonderful company, Boston Scientific, that has been doing many of the Yellow Ribbon requirements for many years, and we're so happy to have them join our Yellow Ribbon company club and really showcase the great things they're doing. So I brought along two representatives who helped lead the way for Boston Scientific to become a Yellow Ribbon company last November. Brian Newcomer and Luke Levesque are here today with us, and they have some great things about a great company to share.
Gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Brian, I want to start with you. I understand you served quite a few years in the Minnesota Army National Guard.
I did indeed. I served a little over 20 years with the National Guard, 18 of which were active guard and reserve. Most of that time I served with the 34th ID at one level or another. It's a great organization.
And I understand that you topped out as a command sergeant major.
I did indeed. It was a very aspirational goal of mine to make it that far, and fortunately I got to serve with a lot of great team members that made me helped me climb that ladder to get to command sergeant major, and it was a great experience.
Well, I'm glad to hear that Boston Scientific has at least one sergeant major on their staff, and you have a partner with you today, Luke Levesque, who I understand, Luke, you served 8 years in the United States Navy.
Yeah, that's right, Tom.
Submarines, Luke?
Yes, 8 years as a submarine officer.
And how did you get to Boston Scientific?
Yeah, you know, so I was looking to transition, and honestly, as many vets can probably attest, trying to find a job post-military service. Ended up with Boston Scientific here in Minnesota. We've been here for going on 2 years now, and the family and I love it. So it was a great decision, great place to be.
Very good, sir. Now, I understand Boston Scientific became a Yellow Ribbon company on November 12th, 2019. And, Brian, were you on the team that went through the process of becoming Yellow Ribbon?
I was indeed, but I'll tell you, Tom, what we found in the process is Boston Scientific was really doing most of the things that were required. And as we went through the checklist with Annette, you know, Boston Scientific received the Freedom Award in 2017. We really had checked most of those blocks off that we needed to become a Yellow Ribbon company. So the exercise really became more of one, how can we become better? And that was probably where we enjoyed the experience most.
So how long did you take putting together your plan to become Yellow Ribbon?
Annette, keep me honest here, but I think it was about 6 months, right?
Yes. I was gathering all the great best practices you were already doing, as you mentioned.
Annette, sounds like you had them on a fast track.
I did, because they were already participating with us in mentor programs and doing some great recruiting and hiring processes that we look forward to sharing with all of our Yellow Ribbon companies.
We're speaking with Brian Newcomer and Luke Levique from Boston Scientific on Minnesota Military Radio. Luke, I want to come to you. I understand that in the process of putting this all together that you learned some best practices from some of the other, that we've learned from some of the other Yellow Ribbon companies.
Yeah, you know, so there's definitely the great benefit of being a part of this broader group, working with Annette and that team, is to understand, you know, not only what our own internal strengths are, but being able to reach out and leverage those learnings from those other folks. So whether that's making connections within the community and putting us in touch with new organizations that we can assist with, or even when it comes to veteran recruiting and hiring internally, it's been wonderful to have those opportunities to connect.
So, Brian, do you have an idea here in Minnesota how many veterans work with Boston Scientific?
Well, we have about 300 members of our employee resource group. They're aligned with the Veterans Employee Resource Group, but not all of them are veterans. One of the challenges I'm sure most companies have is that it is a self-check. You have to self-report whether you're a veteran or not, and that information is confidential information with human resources. So while we have 300 members, it could be many more here in the Twin Cities that are employed as veterans.
So have you found that Boston Scientific has been very supportive of the veterans and their families?
Absolutely. Every time a veteran, a manager or supervisor of a veteran deploys, we are one of their first resources to reach out to. Luke and I are both leaders of the Employee Resource Group for Veterans here in the Twin Cities, which covers Maple Grove, Minnetonka, and Arden Hills. We're one of the first lines of defense as someone deploys so that we can talk them through what to expect, how they can support their veteran, and then we then have this entire employee resource group behind us. If a need comes up for that veteran or their family while they're deployed, so we can get plugged in and help out. That's really one of our primary missions, is to support our veterans as they deploy.
Very good, sir. And Luke, I understand when you become a Yellow Ribbon company, you make some commitments as far as recruiting and hiring veterans. How's that going?
Yeah, you know, so one thing that is kind of to Annette's point earlier that we were able to do coming into the Yellow Ribbon community was to take the practices we're already doing and then help refine and kind of put some structure around those. So there's a strong pipeline for hiring veteran talent into Boston Scientific, especially here in the Twin Cities. You know, so whether that's working with local groups that are helping vets find jobs, or even, you know, like myself finding folks that are outside of the Minnesota area and then bringing them in. The ability to leverage the experience, the leadership, the technical knowledge that our military members gain every day in the service, and then take those and apply those into the corporate sector is something we value.
Luke, you sound pretty happy about being there. Would you say you made a good decision joining Boston Scientific?
Yeah, Tom, I'm not getting paid for this, I promise, but I'm very happy to be here at Boston Scientific. It's been a wonderful transition into a company, right, that really kind of matches my own values as we strive to help others, right, improve quality of life and take care of our employees across the network.
Well, I saved that question for you, Luke, because you can't usually, when you ask a Navy veteran question, you get the truth. And I believe that you're giving us the truth today. If I asked the Sergeant Major that, we'd get the standard question or answer, because he was a Sergeant Major. That's how that works. Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about a little bit about how you work with other support organizations in your communities. We're talking to Brian Newcomer and Luke Levick from Boston Scientific on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to Brian Newcomer and Luke Levick from Boston Scientific. And, of course, we have Annette Kuiper, our Yellow Ribbon Lady, on the line. And should mention to all of our listeners today that there's a stay-in-place order in Minnesota. So with the help of our engineer, Zach, and Sergeant Ben here, we're in separate locations, and we're all connected together via technology. And so if there's a little delay or a little, it's because we're all trying to get our signals. And Zach and Ben, you're doing a great job. Thank you. Annette, we've been talking to Boston Scientific. And they became Yellow Ribbon on November 12th, 2019. And how many companies are you up to now again?
We're up to 71 companies, and Boston Scientific was our 69th company, and we were just so happy to have them join the Yellow Ribbon Company program.
And as we said earlier in the last segment, they were doing so many things well to support veterans and their families and the communities that they were kind of on a fast track, and they made it quickly. And in the process, you discovered, Sergeant Major, I want to come to you, Brian Newcomer. I understand that when you've got veterans coming into Boston Sci for an interview, you get them in early and do something special.
Right. So when we identify the top talent, we bring them in for a couple of days, whether that's people from local hiring fairs or even from, you know, areas like San Diego or where we do other hiring events. We'll bring them to the campuses, both Maple Grove and Arden Hills. The evening before, they'll sit down with other employees that aren't the people that are hiring, get a feel for the company, get a feel for our values, get to talk open and honestly about what it's like to be working at Boston Scientific, kind of make people able to answer the questions they have that you wouldn't necessarily ask in an interview. And then that next day, we've already targeted certain open requisitions so that the hiring managers for those positions are on site to do interviews that day at both sites for multiple positions, with the outcome being we are able to make an offer to those top candidates in weeks instead of months. And in many cases, like with Luke, we're being able to bring people into the organization much, much faster, giving that veteran a sense that they know where they're going to land and some peace. That they know they're coming to someplace that needs them and appreciates them.
Ryan, that sounds like a great best practice for getting veterans comfortable. You meet with them the day before in a comfortable situation, give them some background information on the company, answer a lot of questions. By the time they get to those interviews, they've got to feel a lot less stressed than they might ordinarily feel.
We believe so. That's why we do it. We just keep getting better at it every time we run through it.
I think that's one, when you go to the conferences, you probably should share with the other Yellow Ribbon companies, Sergeant Major. Luke, I want to come to you as part of being Yellow Ribbon Company. You have an opportunity to interact with Yellow Ribbon communities, with other Yellow Ribbon companies, and to support veterans in your communities and in your areas and their families when they're deployed. Can you tell us a little bit about what Boston Scientific does in that regard?
Sure, Tom. You know, one of the great things about the Yellow Ribbon communities is that it gives us a point of contact here locally, right, and in both the Twin Cities as well as across the state, to tie directly in and figure out how we, the corporation, can leverage our veterans and our employee resource group to tie in with the needs here locally. So it's always nice to have an opportunity, whether it's through volunteering, you know, time or service, to give back to those groups and really see the impact in the local communities where not only we live, we work, but now we're helping others. So your comments on working with Yellow Ribbon companies, the biannual conference that's run is a great opportunity to network and to truly get a chance to understand from others, you know, what strengths they've seen, what's working really well, and then to take those best practices and bring them into our organization and continue to help not only our employees but our communities grow.
Very good, gentlemen. Well, thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio, and keep up the great work as a Yellow Ribbon Company. Annette, I want to come back to you. We've just got about a minute left. Another great addition to those companies that you've recruited to become Yellow Ribbon.
Absolutely. And we're so excited. Boston Scientific has already volunteered to host a future Yellow Ribbon Company seminar so they can share all their great best practices with our other Yellow Ribbon companies.
And Annette, is your fall conference still scheduled to be held this year?
Well, we've had to delay our spring conference, so we're working on that right now, getting an alternate date. And then, but otherwise, we plan on our September conference, which is going to be hosted by the Minnesota Wild. So we're very excited to have them share their best practices and the great things they're doing in their organization as well.
Well, we certainly hope that this virus crisis is over soon and we can get back to work. And thanks for bringing on a couple of great new people with Boston Scientific, Annette.
Yes, thank you. And thanks to everyone at Boston Scientific for their great support.
We've been speaking with Annette Kuiper from the Department of Military Affairs, Brian Newcomer, and Luke Levique from Boston Scientific on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, State Command Sergeant Major Brian Soper. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me again.
Sergeant Major, we're living in kind of historic times. Don't think anybody ever thought about the word pandemic before this year, and it's all over the news, so everybody that's listening to this show knows that we've got this coronavirus out there, and we're trying to do whatever business we can do, but one of the things you have to do is make sure that your troops are trained and ready to go at all times. I've heard that the drill weekends are looking a little bit different. Can you explain that to me?
Oh, absolutely. You know, currently we've got three priorities as we're going through, you know, this COVID-19 response. And number one is always, as stated for our organizational goal or priority, is also protecting our people. And then number two would be maintaining mission readiness. And three, supporting the whole of government effort. You know, regarding protecting our people, you know, we're looking at how we can conduct our monthly drill requirements in a virtual kind of state. So the units have put together some different plans as far as how to execute that. And we had a couple last weekend actually conduct this virtual drill, so to speak. And, you know, there were a lot of good things that were taken away from it, some sustains and a couple of improvements. Some of the sustains, you know, this new newer generation, Generation Y, and then kind of going forward, is very comfortable in that type of modality, you know, working on a computer and presenting things in that kind of a format. And it was kind of eye-opening for the unit that conducted the training. A lot of these soldiers are younger soldiers, junior soldiers, that might be a bit more hesitant in a group setting and an organization, you know, traditional setting. Online, had no problem at all conducting a 3 to 5 minute block of instruction to their peers. So it's kind of a new area that we're going into in regard to doing this virtual drill. Some of the intent is, you know, obviously we're practicing social distance, so we're maintaining that 6 foot barrier or buffer between individuals. But then, in addition to that, we wanted to make sure that we're you know, keeping that structure for the soldier, so they do have that that monthly drill. And then for some of our members, they actually have you know, might have been laid off from their other work, so this still gives them that additional income coming in every month. So we're trying to take care of them in that way as well. Over.
So, Sergeant Major, there's a lot of annual training requirements that can be completed online, including some briefings and those type of things, but there are some training tasks and mission requirements that need to be done in person, such as maintenance of vehicles, aircraft, weapons. So at some point, you have to bring your troops in, and I'm assuming you start with some medical screening when you bring them together.
That's correct. So, you know, there are things that, for example, we have a unit, or our brigade is still scheduled to go to the National Training Center this summer, and we have a battalion that's getting ready to deploy later this year to the Horn of Africa on a deployment. So they have requirements where we can't do everything virtually. We'll need to come into an armory or go to Camp Ripley Training Center. And when they do come forward, you know, during this time of the COVID, crisis response, there will be medical screening that will be conducted, before they arrive. And then once they're there, you know, additional medical screening, and, you know, this thing's very fluid. So what we'll be doing, changes, you know, not daily, but, as we move forward, you know, it's very fluid. So the screening that we'll be conducting will be changing a bit. But yes, we're definitely doing screening for all of our soldiers to make sure everyone's safe.
Sergeant Major, we're almost out of time, but I'm sure in addition to the online training and bringing them together, that you're stressing PT, physical training along the way. If they're home with their families, they can go out for a walk, go out for a run, stay in shape.
Oh, roger that. You know, Governor Walz, that's part of what he put out with his executive order 2020. You know, you still have the ability to go outside and do a little exercise. So we definitely are stressing that. And, you know, it'll keep you a little saner in these times to get out and actually build some endorphins as you go out and work off some stress. And if any of our service members have any questions, you know, the best place to start is with their first line leader, to give them a call, or the readiness NCO, or, you know, their organizational leadership, so they can stay in touch. The other part that I would just put out there too is our Minnesota National Guard website has a COVID-19 button you can essentially click, and it'll bring you to what's going on with the units as far as updates as well.
Very good. Thanks for joining us today, Sergeant Major.
Hey, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, Tom.
Yes, sir. That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, State Command Sergeant Major Brian Soper. We're just about out of time. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week. Brian Newcomb, Luke Levick from Boston Scientific, Command Sergeant Major Brian Soper, Commissioner Larry Herkey from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week as we get an update from our service members serving overseas and learn about a new medical procedure at the Minneapolis VA. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.